Red Dot Sites, this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are talking about Red Dot Sights. And our first question comes off of Facebook from Daniel. And Daniel asks, thoughts on a RDS-equipped pistol with no rear sight like the Canik TP9 Elite Combat for EDC and run-and-gun competition? Well, Daniel, that is a really interesting question because the current common thought is that if you are running a red dot sight on a handgun for defense or any kind of duty purposes, that you really need co-witnessed iron sights. And what I mean by co-witnessed iron sights is if you look at the handgun here in front of me, we have a red dot sight on, but we have suppressor height front and rear sights. What this allows me to do is look through the optic and still see my rear sight and my front sight and still align those sights. And if I turn the optic off, I can still shoot accurately utilizing just the iron sights. What this does is this gives me a non-electronic, fairly robust backup sighting system if the red dot sight should fail. This obviously is the common consensus because the bane of current red dot sights, especially at the top tier, is just the batteries. Batteries have a limited lifespan. They are generating power off a chemical reaction. That chemical reaction does expire, and it is sensitive to temperature variations and various other manufacturing defects. As far as the equipment that we utilize, batteries are a very inexpensive component in it, and as we know, inexpensive components tend to not have the same kind of care put into their manufacture that top dollar pieces do. So we do have to be concerned with the batteries failing in the optics. Furthermore, we have to be concerned with if the optic takes a hard enough hit to fracture the circuits in here, to crack the glass, to do something that may throw off the zero of the optic. It more than likely is not going to impact the iron sights, because if I take this thing right now and drop it upside down on the concrete, the first thing that is going to hit is going to be the optic. So the optic is going to take the brunt of the impact. So the possibility of damaging it beyond repair and having the iron sights still function is there. So if you have a handgun that you absolutely positively have to depend upon, then the smart thing to do is go with co-witnessed iron sights on it. And it doesn't have to be anything fancy. Plain Jane iron sights are what I prefer. No tritium vials, no fiber optic, nothing. Just irons, because this is a secondary sighting system. You don't want it to interfere with the primary sighting system. Now, with the Canik TP9, the optics ready versions, unfortunately, the rear sight is actually machined into the optics plate. And to utilize any of their optics mounting options, you have to remove the plate, which removes the rear sight. Furthermore, when you mount an optic, say it's even something that has a rear sight option, like the Leupold Delta Point Pro, the Delta Point Pro, you can attach a adjustable rear sight to the optic and then run a taller front sight on, for instance, the Glock MOS platform and a variety of other platforms out there. The M17 is a prime example, the SIG M17. You can drop a Delta Point Pro and a rear sight on and put a taller suppressor height front sight on and get a co-witness through the optic. I do not believe you can do this with the TP9, even with the Delta Point Pro, because I believe the whole system ends up high enough that you cannot get a current suppressor height front sight to fit and actually get a good zero with that. So you're left with a stubby front sight and no rear sight option at all. Now, this doesn't mean that you're totally out of question in running a setup like this. It is just not ideal. It is not something that I would choose. If you run a setup like that and you put something very robust, say a Trijicon RMR Type 2 on it, this is an optic that has been redesigned specifically to ride the slide. It's been combat proven. It is probably the most durable red dot sight for handgun mounting that is available right now. Now I say this having not received my Aimpoint Acro yet. That is on the way in. The Aimpoint Acro may be right up there with durability with the RMR, but we won't really know until more of them get out in the field. So with the RMR, I would be more comfortable with running a setup like that because the RMR is going to take a pretty substantial impact. It may crack the glass, but the optic will more than likely still function, and you will still be able to put a high-volume, accurate fire down range with it. Now, in the event that the optic does fail, either you forgot to replace the battery 6 years ago, or you did something really stupid, or you got just a factory defect, and the battery contacts lost connection, and you had an issue with it. That doesn't mean you're totally out of the fight. Unaimed fire or point fire or point shooting is a pretty well-known phenomena. It's not something that I necessarily recommend, but most of us that have been shooting for a good amount of time know that at contact range, you don't necessarily need a sighting system. You need to focus on where you want the bullets to go, and you need to point the weapon in that direction. And what you are most likely going to encounter in a civilian environment, that is probably going to be sufficient. I say probably, and I say most likely, because there are always the outliers. There are the workplace shootings, or there are the mall shootings, those kind of things where you really want to be able to get extended and, more importantly, very accurate fire to be able to hit the target and not run a risk to those around it. Again, I'm not saying you should do this, but for a defensive pistol, it's not totally out of the realm. I would, though, recommend just setting that pistol aside and going with a setup where you can mount a co-witness red dot sight. Now, for competition, we switch gears. For run and gun competition, absolutely positively, most red dot sight equipped competition pistols, if you look at IPSC or USPSA or any of the big shooting divisions out there, those red dot sights do not have co-witnessed optics on them. It's only recently that we've started to see the switch to slide-mounted red dot sights. It used to be in the past that you would have a huge bracket that would come up off your dust cover, and you would have a big aim point mounted on top of the gun, and there was absolutely no way to get iron sights that would co-witness through the optic. In a competition gun, iron sights are value added in case, for some reason, in the middle of a stage, your optic goes down. You can actually still finish that stage with the iron sights. But more than likely, unless you are just a world-class shooter, you've already crapped out that stage at the point your optic goes south. So again, not a big deal. On a competition gun, I would say go ahead and run it. But for me, for a defensive carry gun, all of my defensive guns that have optics on them have iron sights. I only have two optics equipped handguns that are not co-witnessed with iron sights. Those are actually 22s, and they are competition only guns. So that's my opinion on that. Now, I haven't actually shot the TP9, and I did a cursory search and wasn't able to find any iron sight sets that would work with that. If you were able to get a tall enough front sight that it will protrude fairly clearly into the view of the optic, then you can use the front sight alone as a course backup. Now, when I went into the SIG Academy Red Dot Instructor course, we practiced a couple of stages of fire where we completely obscured the optic. So you had no red dot, and you had no way to look through the optic. We would tape off the front of it and turn the optic off. That way you couldn't use your iron sights as backup. And at contact distances, we were still able to put very accurate fire on targets utilizing either the guillotine method, where you put the top of the optic across the neck and then you're stacking shots in center mass, or by rolling the handgun over and sighting down the side of the slide or down the frame and using that as a coarse aiming aid. Of course, these are techniques that if you carry a red dot sight, you should be practicing on the range anyway. And if you feel that you are able to put down an accurate enough string of fire then there's no reason you can't carry that for self-defense. You just have to make sure that you understand where the limitations are and understand where the point reaches where you say, I can no longer take an accurate shot on that target. I have to hold my fire. So I definitely encourage you to get out to the range if you already have the TP9, you already have an optic on it, and just shoot it and see how far out you can get accurate fire without the optic turned on. If you choose to do this, though, again, use a high-end optic like the Trijicon RMR. That currently is my top pick for durable optics, although I've been really impressed with this Holosun that we have on here. We'll be doing a full review of the Holosun in the not-too-distant future, but this guy so far is my top runner for a budget red dot sight on a handgun. Our next question comes from Marco, and Marco asks, red dots, one-third lower, absolute co-witness on handguns, which one is the best for EDC? Well, Marco, when we are talking about a red dot on a handgun, one of the biggest differentiating factors between it and a carbine red dot sight is the size of the window. We have a very small window on these, especially for an everyday carry. You don't want to put something really huge on. I mean, there are guns out there that you could strap an EOTech on. There are mounts for especially 1911s where you can put a very large red dot sight on it. Those are very difficult to deal with in a day-to-day carry capacity. So we usually go with these red dot sights that have a much smaller window. When you have the smaller window, you need to be able to make sure that you can pick up the red dot in the window quickly. So you really don't want anything obscuring the red dot. So I prefer to have, it's not even a lower third co-witness, it is an absolute bottom of the window co-witness. When I line up the iron sights, usually the front sight only protrudes into the window just barely enough. So as I'm looking through the bottom of the notch of the rear sight, is actually the bottom of the window. So you can just barely see through the window with the iron sights. That is the perfect situation because then when you're looking over the iron sights, you have as much of the window as you can, and you see as much of the target as you can, which is another benefit of the red dot sight. You see much more of the target. You can see the target's hands. You can see what's going on as you're sighting through the gun instead of having half your target blocked off by a slide and by iron sights. So for me, for a red dot sight, a absolute co-witness where the sights are co-witness through the center of the window is not a good option. I want to run it as low as possible. And most of the sighting sets that you have available out there are going to do this. They're going to be fairly low. That's generally by design. So unless you're mismatching things like using a set of Dawson Precision suppressor sights that are designed for the Delta Point Pro and then putting them on an MOS with an RMR, that will have the sight sticking up further in your window than you really need to. If you run something like the regular RMR intended sights with an RMR, then they stack pretty low. So your dot will still appear on top of your front sight blade when everything is lined up in the absolute bottom of the window. But if you lose the dot and you have to use the iron sights, you have the most of the window available. And if you are just using the dot, then you're looking through and you have a lot of space below that dot to still see the target. So the bottom of the window, not even lower third, just bottom of the window is my preference for where the irons line up with the dot on a defensive handgun. And on a competition handgun, you probably really don't want anything taking up that window at all unless you absolutely feel that you need iron sight backup for competition. And our last question comes from Eric, and Eric asks, compensator on a carry or duty pistol, and yes, stole this from your post the other day. And what Eric's talking about is, I actually posted on our Facebook page what you guys think about compensated pistols for everyday carry or for duty. And this handgun I have in front of me is a Glock 17 with a Zev Technologies slide on it, Zev barrel, and a Zev version 2 Pro Comp on the end of here. So this is a large handgun, but this is still concealable. I've put this thing in a Filster floodlight holster, which is designed to accommodate any handgun that you can put an X300 on. The comp sticks out just a little bit at the bottom, but I could still carry this guy appendix and not really have a problem. Now, I'm not going to want to do that if I'm sitting down in a car for an extended amount of time. And if I burn through two 17-round magazines, which is usually what I'm carrying when I'm carrying off-duty, I probably wouldn't want to hurry up and stick this thing back in the holster because that comp is probably going to be a little bit warm. And since it does protrude beyond the holster, it is probably going to interfere with some sensitive parts down there. But beyond that, compensators really have gotten a huge bad rap from guys for having too much flash, too much sound, too much this and that. And a lot of it really is just internet myths, or it is something a guy saw somewhere and really exaggerated into something else. I've shot compensators with duty ammo at night. I've shot compensators with plus P ammo at night. I've shot them with training ammo. I've shot them under a huge variety of lighting conditions. And the best thing that I can say to you out there before we actually get into a full-blown video where I go out and test all the myths is take your setup and go out and test it. Unfortunately, there are a lot of guys out there that are carrying defensive setups with weapon lights on it and defensive ammo in them that they have never actually shot them at night. That is a huge benefit, so just so you know what's going on and how your weapon is going to perform and how your ammo is going to perform, because each type of ammo is going to perform slightly different. Higher power ammo that has less flash suppressant in the powder may actually give you more of a flash. Training ammo may give you more of a flash, even though it's lower powered because there's no real need to put flash suppressing additive into that powder in order to not throw a fireball at night. So you really need to get out and try things out. Things like shooting from retention. There seems to be this idea that the comp is going to burn your eyeballs out and you're going to get knocked unconscious and all kinds of other crazy stuff. Now, on this comp and many other of the top-end comps, like the KKM compensator, do have side ports. So if you roll the gun in and shoot it from retention like I prefer to do, I prefer to put the mag well, or actually the base plate of the mag, against my rib cage when I'm shooting from retention to keep the slide out to the side and free of any clothing. When you do that, that points side ports right up at you. Not ideal. A lot of the more modern EDC comps or defensive comps, like they are putting on the STI guns or like Parker Mountain Machine is making for carry, only have a top port. So they're directing those gases up. So if you do shoot from retention, that port is kicking the gases out to the side and it's not shooting it out sideways at your face. Now, I haven't got a chance to try those side by side with a regular side ported compensator like this. In a defensive situation, I'm looking forward to doing that when we do a full video about comps on EDC guns. But really, the best advice I can give you right now is if you have a compensated gun and you want to carry it, just take it out, shoot it, and shoot it with defensive ammo. Shoot it at night, and you may be surprised at how little of a problem carrying a compensated gun actually is. Most of the time, we don't carry compensated guns for everyday carry just because they're bigger, they're bulky, they're more heavy, and we're trying to live our lives without carrying a huge chunk of iron on your side. Now, one thing that I will close on that is really, really vitally important is compensators tend to reduce the reliability of the handgun if you are still using the factory spring in here. Very often you will run into short stroking problems, failures to return to battery. It will very poorly eject the cases. Sometimes they will come back and hit the optic, or sometimes they will just dribble out of the side of the gun. So you definitely need to do your homework. Shoot your defensive ammo. If you are running a comp, running plus P ammo is probably a good option because you are getting extra power and you're giving extra gas to that comp to do its work. So make sure you go out there and try a variety of ammo and make sure you're running 100% reliably, because obviously I would rather have a box stock Glock that runs 100% for an everyday carry than a souped up open class race gun like this that maybe it is, maybe it isn't reliable. This one has been pretty reliable with 124 grain training ammo, not so much with 115 grain ammo. I haven't run 147 grain ammo through this setup, but in my past experience, that also does not run very well through this setup. So that is my general advice on compensators for EDC guns at this point. Now, when we go back through and we do the full video that I am planning, which hopefully will get done sometime a little bit later this summer, on all the compensator myths, hopefully we will have a little bit more of an idea for you guys to be able to go through and make a more educated choice about a compensator on an everyday carry gun. And that's it for this Mail Call Mondays. Thank you guys for sending in questions. If you guys have a question that you would like to have answered on Mail Call Mondays, or you have a question about anything we've covered today, please leave it in the comments section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app, you can send questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe, and click that little bell icon down below if you want to be notified when we release new content. And finally, for those of you guys that are supporting us on Patreon, thank you very much. If you guys want to find out how to support the videos that you know and love, check out the link down below to Patreon. We are doing live streams at least quarterly. Actually, we're trying to get them out every month, but that is exclusive for our Patreon subscribers. So if you want to take part in the live streams, then make sure you check out Patreon down below. And until next time, get out and shoot.